Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to equip members of the armed forces and their families to succeed in their civilian career. Today is episode number 353, Career Advice from Andy Chan.
The phrase that people sometimes use is what you put in correlates with what you get out of it. And this process is an investment in yourself. And that what's interesting is that if you do it, you know, you go at it really hard this very first time, there will be other times where you may look for other jobs or maybe want to get a promotion in your organization and the like. And so it'll get easier because you did it the first time. And it's a little bit like learning anything. If you do it really well and do it the right way the first time, then most likely you'll do it the right way the next time. It's, you know, what people say is perfect practice makes perfect.
Today's episode originally aired back in June of 2018, and I'm guessing that a lot of our newer listeners have not heard it. If that's the case, fix yourself. If you have already listened to it, this is one of a handful of episodes that I believe is worth a second or even third listen for everyone, whether you're currently in uniform, hung it up a long time ago, or never wore a uniform in the first place. Andy brings over 20 years of experience helping more than 11,000 students at both Stanford University as well as Wake Forest, and he helps them figure out their next career move. In this interview, he covers ground about the most common challenges people face in a career transition and simple, actionable steps to take to approach this change with more confidence and more skill. Andy packs in so much incredible information in a very short amount of time. I hope you enjoy it and benefit greatly from his advice. As always, at beyonduniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything that we discuss, as well as 352 other episodes just like this provided for free. So with that, let's dive in with my conversation with Andy Chan. Well, joining me today, normally in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, but today in Menlo Park, California, is Andy Chan. Andy, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hi, Justin.
So a couple things for listeners. First of all, I am so excited to reconnect with Andy, and I'm also really grateful, but my gratitude is increased because I thought that he was going to be on the East Coast at the time of this call, and it's 7 a.m. in Denver. It's actually 6 a.m. in California when Andy is out. So not only is he doing me a tremendous favor by being on the show, but he's waking up even earlier than I did to do this. So very much appreciate that, Andy. For those of you who have listened to the show for a long time, you've probably heard me mention Andy multiple times. I often cite his advice when I was at Stanford Business School, and he was the director of the MBA Career Management Center. I've shared on many episodes his advice about not stressing about finding the ideal career, but rather focusing on just closing doors and ruling out options. And that for me took a lot of the pressure off of finding my dream career. And I've heard from a lot of the people in the audience, I know that's helped you as well. So Andy's the source of that. One other area that you've probably heard me talk about is that when I was at business school, I had this debate between going to consulting or to startups. And Andy was just a really powerful sounding board during that process. And one thing in particular I always think of is I had aspired to return to the startup that I had worked at over the summer. And when I was talking with Andy, he stopped me and he said, you know, is that actually an option? You should, you know, check that out and see if that's actually an option on the table, which now that I say it sounds so obvious, but at the time I was just operating under this assumption. And so what I took away from that is just taking the extra steps to actually verify information and see what are concrete options and what I might just be thinking are options. And so, Andy, I just want to say thanks again for joining me and yeah, really excited to reconnect on this.
Yes, I'm really glad to be able to speak with you just in general to catch up, but also to be able to talk about these topics.
Awesome. Well, maybe to set the stage for listeners, I already provided your bio, but could you explain more about the work that you're currently doing at Wake Forest?
Sure. I have two different roles at Wake Forest. One of them is related to thinking about the changing world of work and how to help students of all ages be career ready and how to help them navigate the process from being a student, being in college, whether it be, again, a college that's whether you're an adult student or whether you're an emerging adult, either way, trying to help them navigate that successfully and being prepared for the changing world of work. And then the second piece is thinking about how to help our university be innovative and how do we make sure that we're keeping up with all the changes that are happening in higher education and making sure that as higher education changes, we are continue and remain to be one of the top institutions in the country.
That's great. And you know, between your time at Stanford and Wake Forest, you've been doing this sort of work for a long time now. And I just wanted to put things in perspective. Do you have a sense of roughly how many students you've seen or have kind of passed through your tenure during your time at Stanford and Wake Forest?
Yeah, sure. While I was at Stanford, I worked there for about 9 years. And then I've been at Wake Forest now for about 9 years. Between those two tenures at those two great institutions, I've probably overseen the advising and coaching efforts for about 11,000 students. And then prior to that, I actually had a business career where I worked in consulting at Bain & Company in consumer product marketing at Clorox, and then also was either part of the executive team or the CEO at several high-tech education technology companies in the Valley.
That's awesome. And for listeners, you'll understand why, given that wealth of experience, why I was so excited to have Andy on the show and just kind of apply that lens to some of the questions that I get from people on active duty. And so maybe to start, Andy, I'd love to know, given those 11,000 plus students that you've seen going through various transitions in their life, maybe it's from high school to college, or maybe it's from grad school to beyond, but people getting, you know, new careers and new directions. What are some common challenges that you see people face in deciding on a new career direction?
That's a great question to start with, especially because I do think that there are some things that a lot of people who are searching for the ideal direction or for just a great job of some kind, I think it falls into three different categories, of which the overriding, I guess, umbrella concept is that I think most people have a mindset or an attitude about thinking about their sort of career process that is either a little bit inaccurate or one that holds them back from being as open-minded or as being as keeping the possibilities out on the table. So let me describe those three things. So first is this concept of the mindset of having a scarcity mindset versus an abundance mindset. So I think what happens sometimes with people is they think about themselves in a way that I only have these few things, these few strengths, these few capabilities, these few experiences, so therefore I am not qualified. So therefore, it's going to be hard. So therefore, why should I try? So all of a sudden, their energy is in a very discouraged place. And it's difficult to be in an abundant place because I think at one hand, some people want to be humble and they don't want to be sort of claiming something they don't have. But the number of people I meet who oftentimes when I hear them talk about their background, what they do know, their experiences and their sort of their desires, their dreams are much bigger and they're actually the possibilities are much bigger. And so if you have this mindset of abundance, oftentimes when I meet someone, I'm oftentimes trying to both encourage and speak into, given what they've done, here's what's possible, where oftentimes people don't almost realize it themselves. So their confidence grows just if they can have that restatement as to what is possible. So one of the reasons why I bring this first thing up is, it is really helpful sometimes to talk to someone outside yourself who is an encourager, who is not, you know, sort of blowing you smoke and make you believe things that you can't do, but someone who actually has some grounding in the possibilities that help you move from one place to another. So even if temporarily you might go for a short period of time to some kind of executive coach, one of the things you actually might want to just get a sense for is they seem like the kind of person who's going to be encouraging and positive to me to help me believe how I can have new doors open, and also how I might be able to package how what I do up in a way where it's accurate as to who I am, but also it restates in a way that shows all the possibilities. So that's the first thing, a mindset of abundance versus mindset of scarcity.
That's,
the second thing is that.
That's great. And I want to, I'm excited about the other two. I love that first one. I think abundance is something on my mind a lot. Like I've been new to this concept of scarcity versus abundance. And I forget where I'd heard it. It was probably on another podcast, but they were just saying that the practice of gratitude is one of those ways to cultivate a mindset of abundance. And so just literally every day, I've tried different ways, but every day, whether it's writing down three things you're grateful for or texting a friend something you're grateful for, I think that's a very tangible way to start to cultivate this mindset that there is so much abundance out there rather than just fighting for scarce resources. And the other thing that I really appreciate about what you've said is, and I know we'll probably get into this, but one of the things that I hear from so many veterans and so many guests on the show is that desire to be humble, and that desire, or that natural instinct for many veterans when they leave the military to look around and say, well, I can't compete in this field, or I may not have these skill sets, or I don't know where I fit in. And it starts to set them down a path of ruling out possibilities that might not need to be ruled out. And so I love what you're saying about finding that encourager. And we actually just launched a coaching section of Beyond the Uniform with executive and career coaches. And I love that thought, though, of making sure that whatever coach you work with is someone you believe could be your champion that could encourage you with that positivity. And I love how you said that, to repackage what they've done in a way that's, restating those possibilities and what they can actually offer and bring to the world. So I'm excited for the other two, but that first one really resonated with me.
That's great. Well, one of the things that you did, which also is another way to think about this, is to think about how you can place yourself around people and maybe in an environment where the people who you're around enable you to think about new possibilities, people who might be encouraging to you in some way, where your network, people talk about network, but it's probably less about almost the network of just to help you make connections to get a job, which is important, but also the idea that network is one that is a positive network, where actually the people hanging around are actually adding the concept of possibilities and abundance into your life. I know we sometimes think abundance as being money and expertises or experiences that actually make you feel like you're wealthy, but actually this is an abundance of, I'll call it abundance of your emotional and your heart, where it feels like your heart's growing, your emotions are growing, because you feel like, wow, lots of possibilities. This is really exciting, as opposed to life is small. I don't have options. I have to do the same old thing I've done before. I do think that is something, sometimes being around the right kind of people can help with that too.
That's great. That's a great, great tip. I interrupted you. I'd love to hear the second one.
That's okay. Let's go to the second one. The second one actually relates to something you touched on earlier too, is I do meet a lot of people who, with limited information about the job market or about certain careers, they've made incorrect assumptions about what those either jobs or careers are, or even the concept you put out there is what your options really are. And sometimes what happens is people are, I'd have to almost use like they're at their desk and they're thinking about, okay, it could be plan A or plan B or plan C. And then what they might do is then go, well, what I know about plan A is maybe, they may not even think about this, but they might only know 20% of what is actually 100% of the facts or reality, but they'll start working on trying to figure out how to make a decision off, should I do plan A or not? How do I get plan A? Even though I only have 20% of the data, I'm already sort of constructing what the future looks like or what that job will feel like or how much money I'll make when you don't even know exactly what the job is. And so what happens there is oftentimes when I sit down with them, I try to ask, like, tell me what you do know about. Let's use the example that we talked about when we were together is around investment banking. And what people then do is go, well, here's what I think an investment banker does. And I say, well, have you talked to an investment banker? Or have you actually read about investment banking? And then what happens is they go, no, I haven't done any of that. I just assumed that it was this. And because I actually saw on a sheet of paper that they make all this money or something like that, or I read it in a book someplace. I would say that's the first thing, is to try to figure out, what do you really know? And then given what you don't know, what can you find out to get a clearer picture as to what that's really about? And then given the new information, where do you stand? So that's the other thing that sometimes people do, is they're so hinged on that first piece of information that all of a sudden they've formed all their decisions and assumptions about what the future is like, when actually the first set of information they had was actually not correct. Again, sometimes it's helpful to have someone who you can talk to who's a very, I guess, good listener, but also thoughtful, sort of strategic decision maker, who can help you logically think through, what are my trade-offs? What are my options? Do I have the right amount of information? If I don't, take a little bit more time to get the information I need to make a good decision.
I love that too. I can certainly pinpoint various points in my career, and I'm sure I still have them, where there's it's you don't know what you don't know. And so there can be I interpret that as almost, in my life, like the overconfidence of thinking that I know more than I do and not really having all the information. And I can see why that places stress on me, because I'm literally, I've got so little information to go off of, and I'm trying to make what's a very big, very real decision in my life. And so doing that with such limited information just introduces stress naturally. And I appreciate what you're saying about, again, having that neutral third party. And I think that coaches are great for that, but someone just to listen and to spot those blind spots and to see where we're making those assumptive jumps that might not actually be accurate. And I've had those moments where someone, maybe not even with specific functional knowledge about what I'm deciding, let's say about a startup or about a career opportunity, they might not even really know that landscape. But in listening to me, they're like, hey, you know, you just said this. How do you know that that's true? And it just never occurred to me to question that assumption. But when someone poses that question, it kind of jars me out of that fixed mindset and gets me thinking of like, oh, maybe that's not true. And then, like you said, I love that. Okay, maybe I grab coffee with someone to learn about that, or maybe I do some research to get that information. But it's always been about seeing where those false assumptions are. And then it's pretty easy, I think, especially for military folks, where we love to be tactical. So then once we're like, oh, I actually don't have this information, that's where I think most veterans can crush it, because they can say, okay, I need to go find X, Y, and Z, and then they can go into execution mode. But it's really about uncovering those hidden assumptions and those blind spots.
That's great. I think that's really great. And one of the things that, giving your example about talking to a friend who is a good listener, and who is, whether it be a coach who's actually like trained to do this, or it's a friend, if you even give them permission by saying something like, hey, I want to tell you what I'm thinking about this option, and I feel free to let me know as I'm talking or after you hear what I say, where it feels like I might not be logical, or where actually maybe I'm drawing conclusions where I might not have enough information. And if you just point those out to me, that'd be really helpful. So what it does sometimes is the idea of giving another person some permission to challenge your thinking and to help you see those blind spots is actually something people can do, but sometimes they're afraid to do because they might fear that they'll lose your friendship if they challenge you in that way. So if you give them permission, because that's what you want from them, that also helps too.
That's great. I love that. And what was the third one?
The third. Yeah, so the third is that in general, people underestimate how career ready they need to be able to get a great job. And oftentimes the amount of time and effort that's required to actually find a job is something that people underestimate. And I think it's underestimated for a couple of reasons, but one of the big reasons is that because it's an uncertain process, in a lot of ways it's a hard process, because it's very unclear as to what is really needed, and it's very unclear as to what the employers are actually expecting. It's unclear whether their timing is going to work with your timing, how much you're going to get compensated, and sort of the ups and downs emotionally of going through the process of not knowing what is actually going to happen or how it's all going to play out. People actually keep themselves from actually doing it because they don't want to go through, start the process because they know it's going to be a hard and somewhat emotionally painful process. So I think that's one thing that is interesting is that because it's hard and uncertain and is fraught with ups and downs, most people actually either one, don't even want to really get started, or two, don't want to tackle it wholeheartedly because it's almost like there's a fear of the emotional ups and downs. So it's a very fascinating psychological process. I tell people if I were to write a book, the title of the book or the first line of the book would be Job Search Always Sucks. Like, I know that people could say at the end, actually, it worked out fine and I made a lot of connections, but it's not easy. It's always hard, even in the best of job markets, because of all that uncertainty as to what actually is going to be the outcome. So I do think that is one thing. And the piece I was saying about career readiness is all the pieces of what it takes today to be ready to go, like get a job, is much more than it used to be in the past. In the past, it oftentimes felt like, I mean, people's expectations were lower because they felt like, hey, the employer's in charge. I just have to get a job and I'm just going to sort of suck it up and get a job and I'll take what they give me and there'll be sort of possibilities after that. Today, it feels like there's so many different types of possibilities. There's so many different titles, industries, jobs, the companies are being acquired, they're being, shut down. All these different types of things are happening that a person feels like, wow, you know, how much do I really want this job anyway? Because the future, again, is uncertain. So they think that's one big question. The other is that what do I have to do? I have to do a resume, a LinkedIn profile. If I'm really industrious, I have to do like what you're doing, have a podcast or have a blog or show people that actually I'm following like different sources that are related to that industry. And then I actually have to figure out how to do a tailored interview and be super well prepared, almost like I've done the job before I've actually gotten there. And oftentimes these new jobs are based on experiences or skills that I haven't seen before. So I've got to figure out a way to say that I can learn those skills really quickly or demonstrate I have skills just like them. And it'll take me, you know, a couple of days to figure out how to do it in this new place. And so it's very fascinating is that as much as the internet has increased the possibilities for learning and knowledge and even jobs, it's made it harder to get a job because in some ways it fooled us into thinking if I just apply and fill the application out, they'll pick me. But actually, because there are now thousands and thousands more people applying for that same job, the chance of them picking you goes down, especially as the companies start using like automated systems to screen out the resumes based on the words you put in the resume. So even just what I described there probably gets you a little bit anxious about thinking, right, I'm feeling stressed. The exact right words to put on my resume.
I'm not even applying for a job and I'm stressed out based on what you're saying.
Yeah. So you can see that's the third thing that is usually a challenge for people is, well, how do I go about doing this in the most expedient way possible? Because especially if I get a job and I have to find another job, because either I'm happy or I know that it's time for me to move on. It can be hard. And so you have to, like most people say, you're looking for a job is like another job. You have to think of it that way. Or if you're in school, it's like another class. And I'm usually not getting credit for this other class. So I've got to find a way to make it just part of my regimen. I might have to sort of give up something for a little while, maybe my binge TV watching or maybe something that, you know, I'm doing that's fun for a short period of time so I can really invest in this process.
I love that. And first of all, I will be the first to pre-order, The Job Search Always Sucks or whatever the title of your first book is. Yeah, it would be. But I like what you're saying because I think you're normalizing the feeling that all of us feel, which is overwhelm. And I appreciate the perspective there, too, where this process would have been difficult 20 years ago and just the pace at which things are going and the expectations that we all have of being the next billionaire and the multifaceted angle at which you're not just preparing a resume now, but like you said, LinkedIn and all these other side things, it just increases the actual amount. It's not even the perceived amount of work. It's the actual amount of work required to do a good job, to find a great job. And but I like what you're saying too, is, you know, what I took away from what you just said is, yes, it's a lot of work, but if, you know, if any of you listening are like me, there's always some fat to trim in my schedule. And, you know, I love Westworld. I don't need to watch every single episode this week. And so I think that the great thing is to know that it is going to take a lot of work. We're not pulling any punches. It's going to take a tremendous amount of work. Go into it expecting that, but also know that there's probably nooks and crannies of your life that you can use to help you with that. Things like listening to podcasts like this on your drive to work, or things like just grabbing coffee with someone on your lunch break rather than, you know, reading the news. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of ways to squeeze in this extra work. And I also appreciate what you said there, Andy, too, is it is finite. You're not permanently giving up TV. We're talking about blocking off, you know, months of your life or weeks of your life to really focus on that. And I like that thought too of giving yourself a deadline, because it could be easy to spread this out over a year and then maybe never make the decision to transition from the military or never make the decision to transition from your current job. But give yourself some constraints and say, I'm going to take 3 months to do this, and I'm going to powerhouse it 3 months rather than just sprinkle it over a year, which could be really, really insufferable.
Mm-hmm. You know, the phrase that people sometimes use is, what you put in correlates with what you get out of it. And this process is an investment in yourself. And that what's interesting is that if you do it, you know, you go at it really hard this very first time, there will be other times where you may look for other jobs or maybe want to get a promotion in your organization and the like. And so it'll get easier because you did it the first time, and it's a little bit like learning anything. If you do it really well and do it the right way the first time, then most likely you'll do it the right way the next time. It's, you know, what people say is perfect practice makes perfect. Not just practice makes perfect, because you could be practicing and preparing yourself like incorrectly, thinking you're doing it correctly, and you're actually setting yourself off course right from the very beginning. So it is worth taking that time. And I like all the examples you gave of ways you can actually do that.
I love that too, and that's something I've said on the show before. Just in you know, my case and my classmates' case from Stanford, realizing in today's environment how frequently we shift jobs and roles. And so I love what you're saying, is like, this is something that you're not going to nail this, get your job, and that's it for the next 40 years. Most likely not. And so develop this as a skill. It's worth investing this as a skill, because you're going to do this dozens of times over your career, your civilian career.
Yes. In fact, you know, the job labor market forecasters expect that the average college student today will have at least 20 jobs over their career. And that's a lot. So if there's anything you want to be pretty good at, is learning how to get a job. And I know that one of those pieces is this whole process of, you know, marketing and selling yourself and how to describe who you are in a way that others who may actually want to hire you will want to hire you. And so those things are things that, whether those jobs are all inside the same organization or they're actually at multiple organizations, that's something you want to be able to feel like you're very competent at. So that's one where I think, I mean, this is interesting about in your first question, you know, one of the things as to why I do the work that I do is that, you know, for long enough, we've all sort of expected colleges are supposed to help you with this process, but it never has really been the mission critical part of the educational process. For whatever reason, different schools didn't really invest in this in a really mission critical way. So I've really been on a path to try to figure out, how do you make it mission critical at higher education institutions and help students be more prepared than ever, because of the fact that the world of work is becoming so dynamic, and it seems to be moving more quickly and more competitive. So we have to help students be prepared for that. And so, you know, your investment in this foundation in yourself will pay off throughout your life.
I love that. And I just want to check in real quick. I know I had sent the calendar invite to wrap up in the next 3 minutes. Do you have another 5 or 10 minutes to go long, or do you have a hard stop?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can go for another 5 or 10.
Okay, great. So I had two other questions. I had a lot of other questions, but two in particular. So one that let me just put these both together. The things that are most prominent on my mind for listeners is first of all, how to start narrowing down options. People come, you know, most of the people I speak with in the military, they're coming out to a very wide landscape of potential careers. How do they better understand what's out there? And then how do they start to gain the confidence to actually choose what to pursue? That's one question. And then a second question is based on what you had just said of, packaging my background so that an employer understands it. And if you have any advice on ways to start to tell one story in a way that will resonate with the hiring manager, or, you know, especially for people listening, how to be someone on a submarine in the middle of the ocean and explain how that makes me the perfect candidate for investment banking or consulting or whatever the job is that I'm applying to. And so I would love any thoughts you have on either of those.
Great. So let's see, in terms of just thinking about options and how to begin to make choices. So I think a first thing that is worth thinking about is I will oftentimes try to figure out what are ways we can simplify this big question about, you know, what should I do or where shall I go? And usually I like to start with asking people, like, are there certain places, location-wise, that you see as being a place where you want to live, that you want to call home, that you want to build community? And what's hard is that a lot of people will say as an answer is, I will go anywhere if I can find a good job, wherever that might be. And then I'll name some place that has a reputation for being a not so nice place to live. And they'll go, oh, well, I won't go there. And then I'll name a few other places. I won't go there either. And I'm like, well, you just said you'd go anywhere. And I said, well, I won't go to those places. So then I'll say, well, that means you do have some places that are actually preferential that you'd really like to go to. And they go, oh, okay, yeah, now I would rather go to, like, name 2 or 3 cities. And I say, let's start there. So at least now we've done what you described, which is sort of what's in the bucket or what's in the circle and what's outside the circle. And I know that you could say, well, the circle is sort of gray because that lines of the circle, I'd be willing to go outside of these places if I could find something good. But I'm also really most interested in going to these places. So I usually try to say, let's go with where you want first. And then until we find out what you want isn't possible, then we should open it up to other things. Not let's keep open to everything. And then maybe something will just pop up, because that feels a little bit like the lottery. And it also, location is a really important component around job search, because if you key in on location, you can begin to really study that location to understand the economic sort of makeup of that location, just figure out, are the kinds of organizations that are there and the economy that's there healthy, growing, and is it a kind of environment and work environment that you feel like, oh, I'd like to learn and grow and do something in this kind of environment, this kind of city, because of the kind of makeup. So the kinds of companies that might be where you are in Denver are different than you might find in Charlotte, for example. So Denver has some, you know, energy and obviously some finance and software, and it's sort of new kind of economy businesses. And I'd say in Charlotte, it in general has historically been a lot more of a finance city. It doesn't mean that it's only a finance city, it's starting to diversify, but that's been its history, a lot of banking. And so that's a good thing to think about, is like, given my interest and my wiring, you know, I could say I want to be in Charlotte, but I want to work in startup software companies. It doesn't mean there aren't any software startup companies in Charlotte, but there are probably way more out in Denver or in the Bay Area than San Francisco Bay Area than there would be there. So you just have to think about that a little bit. The second thing about location is that it also gets you in a mindset to think, am I willing to actually go spend a little time there? Maybe even take a week vacation or you know, take time off so I can actually go and spend time and meet people there. Like that is the biggest thing, which you hear that like, close to 80% of all jobs are obtained through networking. Were you referred into a company? Did someone know you? when you actually went and talked to people before you applied for a job. Then when you apply for the job, the people inside the company helped make sure you got an interview and stood out among the 1,000 resumes of people who applied. That's the kind of thing that really makes a difference. And it's really easier to do that if you're in locale because people know you and they see you. I have this motto is that people hire people, not paper. And that what people think is if I just put everything on a resume and I do it really nicely, they'll just look at my resume and it'll be a shoo-in. I'll get the job. And that's almost never happened. So it's so rare that that actually happens. And so what you need to do is find a way to figure out how can I, as a person, be the way that this company or organization gets to know me, not just what's on my sheet of paper. So I think location is one thing. The second thing that I think about is job function and the skills. So what are the kinds of skills that are required to do a certain kind of job? And you can read any job description, see what they are. And based on what you read, you can get a sense for, are these the kind of things that look like I'd like to learn or I'd like to do that I think I could do well? So there is this category that one of my business school classmates, Shirzad Sharmeen, came up with this matrix, and he called it your best work skills. He said, what are the skills that you are really strong at that you can do quite well, that you're also you're really strong at, but you're also very motivated to use. So you like using these skills and you're very good at. Those are your best work skills. To the extent those best work skills overlap with jobs that you're interested in, you're in good shape because actually there's a good way that you might be able to sell yourself into those jobs because you are good at something that you like to do and they have jobs available. So that's a good place to be if that's possible. And there are other categories that I can go through if we want to talk about that. But I would say that's another area that's a way to figure out what are the skills that I would like to use and learn that, and what are the ones that I really don't? And it's okay. There are probably some things that you might really find you get drained by using. And they could be even skills that you've used in the past that's what you're known for, those are tricky, is that when you have skills that you're quite good at, but you don't like to use them, those are called like backup skills. Sometimes you need those skills to actually get your foot in the door and find your way to do a job to get paid, even though your hope is someday you're going to not have to do that anymore. You have to have in your mind, how do I actually get my foot in the door so I can actually have income? How can I actually be inside a company that I'd like to work at, but get to know people and do projects that help demonstrate that I'm interested in new things, I'm capable of doing things more than what I've done before. But sometimes you have to, when you first start in a job transition, do those things that maybe you didn't like to do if you're good at them, because those might be the entry-level jobs that you have to go into. So that's another thing, is don't let the idealism of I need this perfect job, to use these skills that actually maybe I want to use but I'm not very good at. That can be a hard sell because people will say, well, you don't have enough experience there. And so you have to think of what I do have the experience and the skills at, what can I do to get my foot in the door that eventually will maybe allow me to get to know people and do projects that move me into the direction I want to go. And let's see. The last thing that I think of that this is trickier because it's harder to think of upfront to help figure out like what's in the circle and what's not in the circle. So I use one dimension, which was location. The second one was function. And if I could pick a third area that's worth just thinking about, if you're early in your career, but even if you're late in your career, I think about what's the dimensions of the organization I'd like to go into. And I think about a couple different things. One is just holistically, is the category, the industry that they're in, one that seems like there is opportunity for growth. It could be growth that is about, you know, everything is going really well and there's going to be more growing companies. That's one example. It could be one where there's a lot of change happening. Again, where as long as the general dimensions of the industry are moving in a positive direction, there's a lot of change happening, so you'll have the chance to sort of be involved in that change. I'd say be careful to not get into this industry sectors where you look at them and go, oh my gosh, like everything's collapsing, prices are dropping, distribution channels are changing, all the companies are dying. That's not a really healthy place to try to get into, so you want to think about that. And then I'd say the other thing is to think about, can you go into a place when you meet the people and you hear about how they lead and how the organization is run, is it a place where it looks like the employees and the employers, or basically the executives who run the company and managers, have a lot of respect for the employees and vice versa? And do they look like they're interested in helping those people grow and know that through their people, that's how the company actually gets to grow? That's one of those things where as you get to know companies and learn about them, that's what I would be looking for, because that if you do good work, that means there will be opportunity, you'll be respected, and you'll get the opportunity to grow within your organization, do different kinds of things over time. I do think that's another dimension that I would be looking for if I get to that stage where I'm trying to figure out, like, what do I do? How do I know what's in the box and what's not in the box?
This is so over the top fantastic, Andy, and I had to bite my tongue to not interrupt you because I wanted to maximize the amount of Andy knowledge on this rather than that. So for listeners, stick around after the episode. I'll do a little debrief of some of the things that stood out for me from this whole conversation. But Andy, you and I had chatted just briefly before the show about potentially you're dabbling in podcast. I hope listeners, if you've enjoyed this, you will tweet at Andy or send him a note on LinkedIn and encourage him to do so, because you can see the not only the wealth of knowledge he has in this space, but the gift that he has to package that up in a way that's really easy to understand and is very actionable. So Andy, thank you so much for your time today and for your advice on all this. It means a lot.
Well, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and I just want to say a huge thank you to all the people who have served for our country. We are so just grateful for everything you've done. And I do also want to tell one quick story that is important, is that when I was working at Stanford Business School, we had quite a few students who would formerly serve for the country. And many of them were oftentimes very stressed out about the fact that they were in business school, of which there were classmates who actually had a lot of business experience. And what happened was that they felt very like underconfident. They felt like ill-equipped. And what I think it was really neat was the students banded together and they said, let's actually help each other learn what we need to learn so we can get up to speed as to what all these different categories of jobs are. And then what they did is they said, and let's find some alums and maybe some classmates who would help us like practice for interviews, because we don't know what we don't know. It's a little bit of the blind leading the blind. So we need some other, you know, people to step in and help us understand how high is the bar that we have to shoot. And one of the things that was really interesting is how that coming together as a community to help each other was really clear that was something that was very special. The other thing was that they worked so hard, like they were just really committed to figuring it out. And what happened was quite a few of them, after that first round of interviews, they said, wow, Andy, I was so stressed. I can't believe this, but I got job offers from like six companies. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like more job offers for most of the other people. Like, how did you even do that? And they said, well, what's interesting is well, one, I realized I can learn really quickly. That's not a problem. And two is I can work really hard to actually figure out what I need to do to win the game, which is actually the job search process is like winning a game. And he said the third thing was that I did need to know how to interview well and how to answer the questions, which usually the questions fall into three general categories. One is, can you do the job? The second is, do you want to do the job? And then, so that's, will you do the job? So it's, can you do the job? Will you do the job? And the third one is, how well will you fit? So can, will, and how. That actually, those questions come from a friend of mine, Carol Gillette, who I worked with at one of our startup companies. She is an executive coach herself. And it is one of those things where if I know that I can answer these questions, then I said, well, what happened in the interview? They said, well, oftentimes they were checking off these boxes. I could tell, like, can I do the job? Will I do the job? And am I a good fit? And then all of a sudden they would say, I want to hear about some of your experiences when you were actually out in the field or in your job, that just what's it like there? Because I have no idea what it's like. And it just became a conversation, and it just became sort of, I could see myself working with this person because I can tell they're hardworking, they're smart, and they're hungry to learn and make a difference. And it was one of those things where I think that it's important to keep in mind that oftentimes what people want is they want to know, are you hungry? Are you intelligent? Will you be a good team player? Will you be enjoyable to work with? And if you can demonstrate those things about yourself through how you communicate your story, I think that you'll be very appealing to a lot of people. Different jobs require different sort of knowledge and skill sets. So you have to think through, do I need some additional education? And there are many ways of getting education. You can go online, you can do part-time, you can do it, self-taught. You can listen to podcasts is helpful, but it is helpful to eventually have some maybe more sophisticated, structured kind of learning. But I do think that that's the one thing people underestimate, is how fast you can learn new skills and new knowledge And that if you do make the effort to do it, that's actually something an employer would be excited to want to actually see that, wow, you really want this. I want to give you a chance. So I put that out there for you to know that it's possible for you to open lots of new doors for yourself, even though it can feel like it's not.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Andy. This has been really, really, really exceptional.
It's great to catch up with you, and I wish you all the best. Let's make sure we stay in touch.
All right. So was I right or was I right? That was such an exceptional conversation. Give it another listen. Let it sink in. Share this with other people. Let's do a quick debrief of things I didn't have time to say on the show. First of all, Andy on Twitter is Chanfucius. That's also his LinkedIn one, Chanfucius. I love it. Very cool. You can see he really is the Confucius of career management. He's the oracle of this space. So just looking over my notes, you know, one thing that's just kind of funny is when I'm doing these interviews, I jot down the timestamp for the little sound bite that I think would be great at the start of the show. And I've got like 15 of those for Andy. He had so many great, just really spot on sound clips that it was so hard to narrow down the one to actually use at the start. I love his thought. If, you know, ideally working with a coach, but if you work with a friend, make sure you give them permission to challenge your thinking and help see your blind spots. Oftentimes, when we share this sort of these questions or thinking with friends, the natural bias for me is to be supportive and not challenging. And so I love his thought that, you know, before you start talking about your career, giving them permission, like, hey, let me know what I'm missing. Let me know the questions that I'm not asking. Let me know my blind spots. What assumptions am I making? Give them that permission so that when they're listening to you, rather than being that supportive friend, they can take on a different role of sounding board or maybe challenger. And that's one of the reasons I love coaching is that coach, that's their job, is to not be tied to the outcome, not be too emotionally invested in what you're doing, and they're giving themselves permission by the fact that they're working with you professionally to start to point out those blind spots. But if you aren't willing to take that plunge, make sure you give your friend that permission so they can do so. I love what he said. He said, what you put in correlates with what you get out of the job search. Invest in yourself. Go hard the first time. There'll be many other times. It'll be easier because you did all this work the first time. So if you're listening to this and you're on active duty, or if you're listening to this, you're 10 years out of the military, but you're thinking of going for your next job, do it right this time. Put in that time. Put in that effort. To practice to make it perfect, because it will pay many, many dividends times over in the years ahead. I love that Andy talked about people hire people, not paper. Make that step to get to know people, to get out from behind the resume so they get to know you as a person. And, you know, Andy towards the end was talking about narrowing down a location. That applies to everything. That applies to the industry you're thinking of, the functional role, whether it's sales or ops or whatever that functional role may be. It applies to everything. So I love what he talked about of picking allows you to specialize. And I didn't want to interrupt Andy, but one of the things that I hear most often from vets is, I'm a jack of all trades. I'm a Swiss Army knife. I'll do anything. And if you've heard me say on the show before, that doesn't help me help you. When I talk to someone and they say, I'll do anything, I'll go anywhere, I can do anything, it's just not actionable for me. And I'm rushing to the next email, the next meeting, the next call. I can't help you in that moment. But if you listen to, I think it's episode number 176 or 177, Molly Laufer has a great soundbite where she says, I'm Molly Laufer. I just left the Marine Corps. I'm looking to work with health and fitness startups with between 50 and 200 employees in the Bay Area. Do you know anyone who can help me? Now, when I hear that, my brain goes into overdrive, and I start thinking of the five or six people that I can help her connect with, because I want to help her. And you know, I think most people want to help you as a veteran. That's my assumption. So make it easy for them to help. help you. And one of the ways that Andy touched on that was by specializing, by picking a location, doubling down on an industry, doubling down on a functional role. Not only does that allow you to build up some expertise and start to really get to know that one space, but it makes it easier for people to help you. The other thing that Andy touched on is advice that he gave me at business school that helped me. He talked about mini tests. So he's like, once you've narrowed down an area, go there, visit, get to know people, get to know the landscape. And that's something you could do on a week of leave. That's something you could do on a weekend. And that's one of the pieces of advice he gave me at business school that I still pass on, which is do these mini experiments. Okay, my current hypothesis is that I want to work in a fashion startup with 50 employees. Great. How can I mini test that? Well, at Stanford, we had Wednesdays off, so I could take Wednesday and go and actually volunteer to work in a company. Or maybe I could do coffee chats with someone. Or maybe I could read a book about that space. Find tiny ways to get more data to validate that hypothesis. And so that's another thing that I didn't want to interrupt Andy on, but I want to make sure I share it. Another thing that stood out to me, he talked towards the end about one of the dimensions to look at is the dimensions of the organization you like to go into. And he's talked about, is it an industry with opportunity for growth or for change? So, you know, if you're thinking of going into inkjet printers as a business, there might not be a lot of growth there. If you're thinking of going into traditional newspapers, at least as the time of the recording, maybe not the best industry to go into. If you're thinking of going into yellow cabs or owning a franchise in the cab industry, probably not an industry for growth. But you know, depending on when you're listening to this episode, there's always industries that are starting to grow. They're starting to go through change. If you've listened to the blockchain and cryptocurrency interviews, you know, people have different views on the volatility of that space, but there's certainly a lot of opportunity there right now. Drones is another space that at the time of the recording, there's a lot of growth around that. Machine learning and artificial intelligence, there's a lot of growth there. But you could look at it conversely, like where is there opportunity for change? Uber is exploding an opportunity for change in the transportation industry. So I love that as a dimension. I know that Andy kind of flew by that because we were at the end of the interview. I think there's so much richness there for you as listeners to explore. And then the thing that I didn't have time to chime in, but his story at the end was so fantastic about learning the process and these veterans who learned to interview well. And I love the dimensions he gave. He talked about, can you do the job? Will you do the job? And how well will you fit in? The can, the will, and the how. And not underestimating how quickly you can learn. And my last kind of takeaway for you as listeners is I've done 180 of these interviews. I have talked to countless other vets offline in trying to help them or do my part to help them in their career transition or career growth. The one thing that I can say for certain is that every single person who served in the military, you are more likely than not fantastic at execution. You are great at the tactics, and your determination and stamina is unparalleled. And so what I have confidence in is that once you identify the career that you want, you will be unstoppable. Once you have clarity on the direction you want to go, then we get into the world that you own, which is blocking and tackling, which is breaking through walls, which is making whatever it takes happen to obtain that mission, to achieve mission success. I have no reservations around that. The piece of advice that I would give based on my experience in interviewing veterans is take the time to get to know yourself, to figure out what it is you want. As Andy talked about early in the interview, to challenge your assumptions, to see what you don't know, to see your blind spots, and to give yourself permission to explore options that you may have ruled out. So often I talk to vets that narrow in on government contracting or something like that. That may be the right answer, but there may be a better answer out there that you don't know about yet. So giving yourself time to have coffee chats, to listen to other interviews where you can learn about other career options out there. And coaching, again, is a great way to do that. That's why I added the coaching element to Beyond the Uniform. That's why I'm such an emphatic supporter of it, is it is the most efficient way that I know of for you to get clarity around your values and your intention for the next step in your career, which may be just for 3 to 5 years. This is a repeating process. So find a way, whether it's through coaching or through some other way, to expand the options you're looking at and to really vet what would be perfect for you. And the other aspect that I would add to that is to, like, you know, Andy said, don't underestimate how quickly you can learn. I would also add that, you know, based on the interviews I've done, don't underestimate how much work it's going to be to not find a job, but to find something that is a calling, a passion, that is something that is going to light you up and energize you. You deserve that. You deserve, you know, many of us, you know, myself included, and a lot of the people I talk to, many of us did not like a lot of the aspects of the military. I did not like nuclear engineering. And so for me to just by default leave submarines and go to a civilian nuclear power plant, it's not doing justice to my family. It's not doing justice to myself. It's not doing justice to the military community, because I'm not going to be able to help out people, you know, find their ideal job. I'm not going to be able to help out the veteran community by furthering our presence in the civilian workforce. So my final piece of advice is, don't underestimate how much work it's going to take to find that job, to really spend the extra months and the late nights giving this the attention it deserves. But as I said previously, if anyone can do this, you can. You have the energy, the drive, the determination, the skill set to make that happen. Let me know what you think of this interview. Check out coaching on the site. If you like this, please, please, please leave us a positive review on iTunes. It helps get the word out. And I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.